Should Facebook enable illegal online pharmacies to sell drugs without a prescription?
Congressman, I believe that's against our policies.
Yes or no? Do you think you should be able to do that?
No, of course not.
Usually, when you take the anti-malarial course, by the second day, you should be fine. I mean, you should be not perfect, but almost fine.
Operation Pangea, which is the world's largest internet-based global operation that was aimed at tackling and disrupting criminal networks.
Counterfeit products pose a serious threat to the well-being of people. Not only can they be dangerous, they also may be supporting organized crime networks.
If you only knew just how much is involved in getting your medication to you when you get sick. The pharmaceutical trade is complex with long supply chains. The World Health Organization puts it perfectly. A tablet in Germany may be made in Egypt from ingredients imported from India, Brazil, and Spain, packaged in foil that came from China and inserted into a box designed for the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and shipped to Liverpool by way of Dubai. Then a trader in the United Kingdom taking advantage of fluctuations in the foreign exchange rate might legally repackage the medicines with information written in German and ship it to Munich. You're listening to The Impact, Coronavirus and Organised Crime from the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organised Crime. I'm Jack Meegan-Vickers. For the next few months, this special edition weekly podcast will look at how the ongoing coronavirus is impacting organised crime around the world and how the illicit economy may affect our ability to respond to the virus. Markets for fake, fraudulent and counterfeit goods, it's estimated, are worth between $65 and $200 billion each year. It's one of the largest and most lucrative forms of organised crime. And this week we're going to be discussing the biggest of them all, the counterfeit medicines market. Because in a period of unprecedented pressure on global health systems, it is critically important that we can feel confident in our care. But the criminal actors who manufacture and traffic fake meds are already moving in to capitalise on coronavirus. So borders may be closed, flights may be grounded, but we will still take you on a journey around the globe, from the continent of Africa to Southeast Asia, and from Jalisco in Mexico to the place where we're going to start, Central America. The sale of illicit pharmaceutical drugs is a growing problem around the world. It's a particular concern in developing countries, which are the target markets for many of the fake meds currently on sale. They lack adequate healthcare, and poverty forces people to seek cheaper alternatives to life-saving branded drugs. And it's this demand for affordable medicines that drives criminal markets. Peter Tinti is a senior research fellow at the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. Peter wrote a report called Dark Pharma, Counterfeit and Contraband Pharmaceuticals in Central America for the GI, which looked into the proliferation of contraband and counterfeit medicines that were being sold and trafficked throughout the region. And he joins me now. Peter, first of all, can you explain what we mean when we talk about counterfeit medicines?
When we talk about counterfeit medicines or counterfeit pharma, often that's a catch-all term for sort of several broader phenomena. The first is the use and sale of contraband pharmaceuticals on the black market. Those are medicines that are actually real medicines that are just being sold through illicit or informal channels. So in these cases, both the vendor is selling a real functioning pharmaceutical and the consumers are seeking it out. Then there's also counterfeit medicines, which is purely people who are producing fake medicine and selling it. And then third, there's the category of substandard pharmaceuticals, which are pharmaceuticals that are created and produced in ways that aren't up to the proper standards that medical providers would require and that regulations require. And those come in both the form of criminal actors purposely making these substandard medicines, but also in the form of poor production habits, as well as in some cases, lack of storage or poor facilities. So oftentimes we might have medicines that have expired being sold in formal and informal channels and on the black market, or medicines that have not been stored properly and their effectiveness have been reduced. And these are problems that we're seeing in all over the world, but Latin America and particularly Central America are struggling to combat both phenomena.
Like much of the rest of the world, countries within Central America like Panama, Honduras, and El Salvador have all shut their borders in an attempt to combat the COVID-19 virus. This, of course, causes major disruption to the flow of goods, including counterfeit medicines. What does that disruption look like?
So in the very short term, border closures are going to limit a lot of the flows of contraband pharmaceuticals that enter countries. A key component of these black markets is the procurement of pharmaceuticals in one country, often in a place where they are subsidized by governments or can be purchased at low prices. And then actors move them across borders into markets where they cost more. One country in Central America where this phenomenon seems to take place quite a bit is Nicaragua, where criminal organizations will purchase subsidized medicines from Nicaragua and then smuggle them or traffic them into other countries such as Costa Rica or Panama or even other parts of the sub-region in order to sell them for a profit. So a lot of this movement that just naturally takes place across borders is going to be shut down if borders are closed. And then similarly, there's a lot of very small-scale black market actors. So these are people who are selling, you know, very basic anti-inflammatories or what we might call just over-the-counter medicines that operate in the black market. A key part of their business model, at least according to our research, is that they often source their products in other countries and, again, smuggle them across the border. But that's as simple as having someone within the network travel back and forth, moving medicines in a suitcase or a backpack. And obviously that business model is going to be pretty heavily affected, at least in the short term, by border closures.
With healthcare systems around the world predominantly focused on fighting COVID-19, what does this mean for those people who still need other medicines, medicines that perhaps they are no longer able to get?
Sure. Well, even before the COVID-19 crisis, this was a problem in many countries. That is, when citizens of a given country cannot access formal health systems, either because they don't have access for political reasons or economic reasons, they literally can't afford the treatment they need. Oftentimes, people turn to the black market to try to procure medicines and treatments at a discount. So I think it seems pretty likely that in the short term, we're going to see people who cannot afford to use the formal public health systems to seek alternative treatments. This is, you know, different from just purchasing a real pharmaceutical that is proven to work on the black market. It's when people resort to alternative treatments or listening to rumors about what may or may not work. And we've already seen this in a lot of countries around the world. There's been a lot of debate around whether chloroquine can act as a cure, which is an anti-malarial drug, whether that can act as a cure or a treatment for COVID-19. There's also been rumors about antivirals working or HIV medication. And there's just a ton of information out there that really tends to travel around social media very quickly, often via Facebook or WhatsApp. And organized criminal groups are really good at finding ways to profit from this sort of misinformation. And one thing we're likely to see is organized crime trying to be the provider of these types of kind of false cures or false concoctions that can be used to treat COVID-19. The hardest evidence we have of this is that Interpol has already uncovered several cases of criminals trying to hawk anti-malarial meds and antivirals as possible treatments online.
You mentioned the online space, an area of interest to me, and as you said, counterfeit medicines are actually being sold on the internet in plain sight. But we may have other scenarios where, in desperation, a person in need of treatment might venture onto the unregulated, illicit darknet markets to find what they need.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a trend that I think is worth watching, and we may see a real increase in the use of fake online shops or pharmacies, as well as actors using the dark web. So, you know, the internet is already just full of actors selling contraband and counterfeit and substandard pharmaceuticals. And in some cases, these are just really amateur operations. It's someone who is basically hawking small amounts of whatever they've been able to procure and selling it via Facebook or WhatsApp. But in other cases, it's much more sophisticated and it takes place on the dark web. And, you know, we may see people trying to self-medicate or treat the ailments that come with living in a time of coronavirus, for lack of a better way to put it. So these same kind of dark web shops that might sell opiates or painkillers to be used recreationally, they might be very well positioned. As consumers become more desperate for these products, in cases where there are shortages or where they cannot afford to procure medicines and treatments through formal channels and through the actual formal healthcare system, as you just noted, we'll see people who otherwise would have never considered it to start purchasing it. The dark web is kind of a frontier that is very hard to get a handle on the size of and the impact it's having on contraband and counterfeit pharmaceutical economies.
What impact do substandard drugs have on society?
The prevalence and the proliferation of counterfeit and substandard pharma puts strains on healthcare systems, even in normal times or, you know, the world before coronavirus. Substandard and ineffective medicines worsen the conditions of sick individuals, and they also hinder medical professionals' ability to make accurate diagnoses. As a result, it can really accelerate the spread of communicable diseases and increase drug resistance and ultimately kill people. So one of the real challenges here is as people sometimes unknowingly take medicines that are substandard or falsified, they will tell their doctor that they've been taking, you know, medicine X, Y, and Z. This will throw off diagnoses because oftentimes prior treatment is how medical professionals start to rule out what might be the particular problem for in an individual case. So there really is a vicious cycle here, and that's one in which substandard and counterfeit pharmaceuticals weaken health systems. And also countries that have weak or weakening healthcare systems are the ones where contraband and substandard pharmaceuticals are the most appealing to desperate consumers.
The global pharmaceutical industry is incredibly complex, and we've mentioned the disruption caused by border closures due to coronavirus. Does this encourage criminal actors to fill the vacuum left?
The global supply chain for medicinal products is incredibly complex. And so we know that there are disruptions in the global economy as a result of COVID-19, but it's actually pretty hard to forecast how this results in shortages and of which shortages and where. So given that a factory has shut down in Indonesia, we just don't know how that factory shutting down will affect or reverberate throughout the supply chain, or how a container ship that's being docked in, pick any major port in the world that had to temporarily shut down, well, then we just don't know how that container ship's lack of movement will influence other parts of the supply chain. But what we do know is that there will be certain types of disruption, and these disruptions can create gaps in the formal pharmaceutical market for criminal actors to exploit. This could actually even include healthcare providers. Individual consumers are going to be incredibly desperate to get their hands on the medicinal products that they need. But so are healthcare providers and healthcare systems. And we might even see cases in which hospitals or clinics or doctors might try to cut corners out of desperation and show a willingness to use procurement channels that would otherwise be unthinkable or considered too risky or dangerous in order to get the products they need. There are no concrete examples just yet of healthcare systems cutting corners in order to procure medicines. But I think there have been some cases already of healthcare systems unwittingly or accidentally ordering things like face masks that ultimately proved to be substandard or defective. And in this time of desperation, I think we might see even more of that.
Thank you very much to Peter Tinty. You can follow Peter on Twitter at Peter Tinty. You can also read his report, Dark Pharma, Counterfeit and Contraband Pharmaceuticals in Central America, by clicking on the link in the summary of this episode and also on the Global Initiative website. Let's stay in the Americas and head to Jalisco State in the west of Mexico. You may have heard last week's show, and if you didn't, do go back and give it a listen. It'll give you a great overview of what's going on around the world with coronavirus and organized crime. But we spoke with Siria Gastelum Felix, the resilience director here at the GI, who gave us a detailed picture of what's going on in Mexico at the moment. And Siria said something that caught my ear, and that was based around the Jalisco New Generation Cartel and their role in counterfeit medicines. And Syria is with us again this week. Syria, who are the Jalisco New Generation Cartel?
It's one of the fastest growing transnational organized organizations in Mexico, and it's known for its extreme use of violence and their use of public relations. For example, last holidays, the cartel, according to media reports, was giving out toys to children in the state of Veracruz. So they're one of the biggest producers of meth, fentanyl, and they're in charge of crossing a significant proportion of drugs entering into the United States. They have operations, of course, in America, in the Americas, but also in Asia and Europe. Currently, the DEA offers a $10 million reward for those offering information that can lead to the arrest of El Mencho, as is known, its leader. They're the most violent cartel in Mexico, and their history is violent. They were created to wipe out the Zeta cartel, another very violent organization.
It was reported in a Mexican newspaper that the cartel has been forcing pharmacies to purchase their bootleg medicine. What have you heard?
Yes, according to the Mexican newspaper La Jornada, the National Union of Pharma Business People, UNEFARM, as it's known in Mexico, took this issue to the federal attorney. And this use of violence, these threats that they are denouncing, is not a rare occurrence in Mexico. It's not surprising to see that a criminal organization is demanding forcefully using violence from small businesses to move their product.
Mexico has the sixth largest market for clandestine medication in the world. Why is it so high in the country?
Pharma in Mexico is a complicated landscape where a few private companies monopolize production and distribution. And these translates into prices that are simply impossible for most people. Andrés Manuel López Obrador, the president of Mexico, promised to change this, tightening controls on the industry. And it was, in fact, a member of his party that pushed for this initiative a year ago, but nothing has changed yet. It takes a long time for an initiative to go from being a proposal to turn into a law and then being implemented. But pharmaceuticals are a hot political issue. They have been since the beginning of the presidency of López. He has been widely criticized for the low supply of medicines for cancer patients in public hospitals, for low supply for medicines for people with HIV, diabetes. The government claims that these low supplies are due to a transitional period necessary, required to eliminate corruption in procurement in public health institutions. So early this year, the government announced that they wanted to import these medications to deal with the low supplies. So this was an announcement early this year.
As a result of the growing health crisis around the world, can we expect a rise in the use of counterfeit medicine?
I think we can expect definitely at least the continuation of these dynamics of contraband and counterfeit medicines if this issue of supply of medicines in public health institutions is not dealt with by the government. If there's a low supply and the problem continues, people will keep finding other alternatives to find these medicines. And for the government to solve this problem, it's definitely going to take time. Regulations take time to implement, and the strength of organized crime combined with this corruption within public institutions, it's so hard to eradicate. So it means that it's probably going to continue. Plus, if you add that to just, you know, the habit that has been going on for years of people acquiring their drugs, their medicine from the illicit channels, it's not going to be something that we will be able to transform from one day to another. People are simply used to go to the outdoor markets instead of the pharmacies. And if it's an issue of corruption, if it's an issue of organized crime, it's not simply with, you know, just passing legislation or dealing with a certain organized group that controls the production of medicine. There's a lot of factors involved that indicate that probably this problem is going to be only exacerbated by a health emergency like COVID-19.
Once again, thank you very much, Syria. You can follow Syria on Twitter at Syria Gastelum. We'll be back in a moment after this short break.
There is plenty more to come in the show, so do stay with us. I'd just like to take this moment to say that the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime are across social media. Just search for the Global Initiative and you'll find us. You can also visit our website, which is www.globalinitiative.net, where you can find in-depth reports and analysis on subjects as far-ranging as drug trafficking and human smuggling to illegal gold mining and the illegal arms trade. But in the meantime, let's get back to the show.
Welcome back to The Impact, Coronavirus and Organised Crime from the Global Initiative with me, Jack Meegan-Vickers. Today we're looking into the largest of all the fake markets, counterfeit medicines. We're living in a globalised world. Medicines can be manufactured, printed and consumed in entirely different countries. Fraud could happen at any point along that supply and distribution chain. All of this makes them particularly difficult to track and monitor. Robin Cartwright is a former trade consultant, author and researcher into organised crime with a particular expertise in the illicit goods and consumer products. For the ENACT programme, a joint initiative of the GI, Interpol and the Institute for Security Studies, he's been looking at the counterfeit medicines market on the continent of Africa, and I'm delighted to say that he joins me now. As we've heard throughout the show, this is a global industry, but a sizable portion of the market for these goods is based in Africa. Why is that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Africa, we found from comparing it with other parts of the world, is particularly vulnerable to this sort of crime. And for several reasons that sort of come together in almost a perfect storm. And one is that they have very high prices in Africa. Their supply chain is very expensive. So the actual consumer prices for standard medicines is very high, which makes it worth counterfeiters and criminals getting involved in the market, first off. Secondly, we can see a huge reliance on certain drug types in Africa, particularly anti-malarials and anti-pneumonia drugs. So antibiotics for pneumonia tend to get heavily counterfeited. And thirdly, the enforcement efforts and the efforts by criminal justice to outlaw and to combat this crime are still at a fairly early level in an awful lot of African countries, whereas in the European Union and in America, they have quite tight regimes which are policing the supply chain for drugs, which unfortunately we haven't yet been able to afford in most African countries.
Have you seen any examples of counterfeits in relation to the coronavirus outbreak?
We're sorry to say we have started to see examples. It's very early days yet, and of course this is a viral, so it's not automatically in any market, even a legitimate market, yet able to be addressed by vaccine. Of course, we haven't got one yet for COVID-19. But despite that, there was a major operation by Interpol in March 2020, which is a latest operation in a string that they've had called Pangea. And this particular occasion in March, they managed to do a huge sweep of counterfeit and falsified pharmaceuticals across Africa. They found thousands and thousands of examples, but included in that, they found 34,000 counterfeit surgical masks. And they also said that they saw a worrying rise in fake antivirals being found as part of that sweep. So that's pretty fresh information, given that that latest Interpol operation is only in March this year, just literally a few weeks ago.
You mentioned a couple of things there, including fake surgical masks and fake antivirals. And given that those purchasing these things will assume they are the real thing, what are the risks from counterfeit meds?
The PPE market, as it were, this personal protective equipment market for healthcare workers, is absolutely essential at the moment in protecting healthcare workers from the virus and keeping them able and providing services. So the natural reaction is to worry about any healthcare worker that's using a fake or insufficient protection from a mask. That would be a huge worry. But there's a lot of other things going on here, because people are being sold antivirals for COVID-19 when there is no existing medication. No formulation has been developed yet for COVID-19. So people are being falsely scammed by emails. But all of those have, you know, potential health impact. And the final point is that the very significant health risks in Africa that have been the focus of attention over the last, you know, 20 or 30 years are suddenly getting less attention. That's a real unintended consequence of this rush to focus on the crisis. And so malaria, which kills many, many hundreds of thousands of people, at the moment we're worried that the efforts to go into clamping down on fake anti-malarials might be undermined by the huge amount of effort that needs to go into combating the crisis as well.
You mentioned the fake anti-malaria medicines, which is a real problem in Africa. Why do the poorer sections of society suffer more from counterfeit or substandard medicines than other sections of society?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. I mean, we think up to 30% of the market in Africa, this is before COVID-19, was infiltrated by counterfeit or substandard medicines. And these are often medicines that simply don't work. So they have no active ingredient, but they look the same as a regular anti-malarial or a regular antibiotic. And what happens is that, particularly in the case of malaria, you have a very small window to take an anti-malarial to save your life. It can be as little as 3 days. And if you don't take an active ingredient, a legitimate anti-malarial in that time, you can die. And actually, a World Health Organization report thinks that between 64 and 158,000 people die every year from malaria, where those deaths would have been avoidable if they'd taken a legitimate product. And that gives you a sense of what an incredible profiteering racket there is in terms of criminals identifying these weaker supply chains and these people who are desperate for anti-malarials and giving them drugs that simply don't work.
So do you think that counterfeiters see the African continent as an easier target?
Yeah, that's it. There's an incredibly well-developed technology around tracking and tracing pharmaceuticals that has now been legislated into the market in both the European Union and most of the US. And that market makes faking pharmaceuticals in a lot of those developed countries much more difficult, because track and trace technology means that every item in the supply chain, every packet of pills, is itemized and authenticated as it goes through the supply chain, just like a sort of barcode. And these haven't yet been implemented in Africa. We really want to push the implementation of that sort of testing and that sort of authentication in Africa.
We have heard and seen claims of coronavirus cures online and elsewhere. And with this type of messaging alongside the fake drugs that aren't real and don't do the thing they claim to do, what kind of impact could this have on a society where people think they are, where people think they have taken something that is protecting them from coronavirus, for example, and they go on to ignore social distancing rules?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because if people are suckered into thinking that they have taken a drug that makes them immune, or any false claim like that that's coming through on internet, some of these phishing scams, then yeah, there is a potential very negative result if people believe that they can then go out and about and start becoming super spreaders. But, you know, I think that the problem with this form of criminality is that because pharmaceuticals are such an incredibly valuable commodity to people, they do attract absolutely the wrong attention. And we've seen huge rise in the number of these phishing scams, these emails. 2,500 internet links were taken down in March 2020 in Africa, which were people posing as legitimate pharmaceutical salespeople. And so we've even seen phishing scams where people are posing as World Health Organization officials, asking people to give money or disclose details they shouldn't be disclosing. So there's an awful lot of entrepreneurialism, I'm afraid, going on in the criminal community right now around COVID, as around any pharmaceutical market.
Thank you very much, Robin. And you can read Robin's report, The Rise of Counterfeit Pharmaceuticals in Africa, on the Enact website by clicking on the link in the summary to the show. The battle against counterfeit medicines is going on right now. Just a few weeks ago, Interpol launched Operation Pangaea 13, a global operation in 90 countries against dangerous pharmaceuticals worth more than $14 billion. Amongst the seized items were counterfeit face masks, substandard hand sanitizers, and unauthorized antiviral medication, which shows that criminal actors are trying to make fast cash from the pandemic. One country that's been a member of Interpol for decades is Malaysia, and like many countries around the world, they're in lockdown as well. But they've been warning their citizens to remain vigilant online and to avoid counterfeit medicines and the claims they make. But what I find most interesting about what Malaysia are doing to fight counterfeit medicines, it's the cybercrime fighting pharmacists. That's right, the Malaysian government trains some pharmacists in computer forensics. Norlinda Abdul Rahman is the Senior Principal Assistant Director at the Pharmacy Enforcement Division in the Ministry of Health in Malaysia.
So the first part is we start off with small activities like screening and monitoring sellers online. Then once we have established that activity, but we wonder what should we do with those links that we have screened. So we then go for cyber intelligence training and we try to profile those suspects or sellers online. Once we have done that, so we expand the activities to seize their digital device and we start to build up digital forensic labs in pharmaceutical services program. Now we are planning for a lot of things, like we realize that there is also a dark web where we are now heading towards that, where we are going to be trained on cryptocurrencies, intelligence, and also we are trying to learn about the Internet of Things forensics for us to expand our activities in terms of investigation on online sellers.
Thank you very much to Nalida. Watch out, counterfeiters. Nalida and the Pharmacy Enforcement Division are coming for you. Remember that you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter about coronavirus and organised crime by heading over to our website, www.globalinitiative.net. You can find the GI on social media by searching for the Global Initiative. And that's all we've got time for today, but we'll be back next week when we'll be searching for Mr. Robot. We're talking cybercrime. Leave a review, like and share us with your friends. Why not just hit that subscribe button, seeing as you're next to it. I'm Jack Megan Vickers. Remember to wash your hands, and for those in lockdown, stay at home and stay safe. Thanks for listening.